Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The corner of Broadway and Battery. This is the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game. Now, Damon Bruce.
All right, this show is all about butt running, it's all about top locking, and it's how the Warriors get back to normal tonight, right? We've got all sorts of talk about Game 3. If the Clippers win, all hell breaks loose. If the Warriors win, we're right back to normal. At least that's what we're all hoping for. Welcome back to the Damon Bruce Show. Welcome back to Ray Ratto. Welcome back to all of you. It's good to see you all again. Yes, even you, Ray. Good to see you again. How you doing?
I'm okay. Although I'm never happy to see me.
It's all right.
I mean, every day I wake up and it's still me. Just, it's not a good way to live.
There it is. Every day. Ray Ratto back in the mirror. Warriors, I think, have looked at themselves in the mirror quite a bit. I think Kevin Durant, I think Steph Curry, I think Klay Thompson, everybody's got a little introspection to do after such an embarrassing defeat. I know there's been a little bit made of the Clippers t-shirt that they're handing out tonight. The only thing I have to say about tonight's Clippers t-shirt is...
it was brilliant.
Bravo. If you haven't heard, the Clippers have the best sports t-shirt of the year that they're putting out for all their fans tonight at Staples Center. It says, "We believe," which we all know is clearly a shot at the Golden State Warriors, except the B-E-L-I-E-V-E, the I and E are flipped and turned into the numbers 31 to represent the comeback. And it's phenomenal. Like, who's ever in charge of marketing for the Clippers, whoever came up with that t-shirt, an extra $5 in next week's paycheck.
I'm guessing it was the night janitor who immediately told somebody, and the head of marketing promptly took credit for it and ordered the t-shirts.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because we're talking about a 2-day turnaround. I don't know how easy it is to make 20,000 t-shirts, but...
cranked them out quick. They cranked them out quick. They're on the back of every single seat tonight at Staples Center.
They almost had to think of it as soon as the game was over.
Yeah, they had to move quickly on that one. There's no doubt. Somebody jumped all over that and, like, give it to them. I know a lot of Warrior fans were mad at that. Matt Stymans normally doesn't get angry at stupid things like this. I heard Stymans getting angry about it today. Look, they're Clipper fans. Well, give it to them. It's all they got.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not all they have, but it's the thing they have most recently. And I don't know... you know, if this was part of their thinking. But the Warriors have been dogged by this 3-1 thing since they took the pipe in 2016, and they did. Make a shot in the last 5 minutes, then pop off. But they also beat a team 3-1. They also won 3 of the last 4 titles. They could play with 31, too, if they want to.
Sure. There's not a lot of embarrassment that the Warriors should be feeling over this t-shirt.
They feel nothing about this? This doesn't resonate with them. It's something we amuse ourselves with because, well, there's 69 hours before the end of that game Monday night and the start of this one tonight. And I didn't pick that number out of the air. That's what it is.
Well done.
Thank you.
You can do math.
It was nice.
Draymond Green says it's not his job to tell Kevin Durant to shoot more. And you know what? He is right about that. It's not his job to do that. It's Steve Kerr's job to do that. We talked to Steve Kerr about how he did his job, what he liked, what he didn't like in Game 2. And if you missed Steve Kerr on with us yesterday, we're going to have a Steve Kerr replay coming up at 4:20 this afternoon, which would probably be a good time for you to just sit back, relax, and listen to a little Steve Kerr, if you know what I mean, at 4:20. Jim Barnett joins us at 4 o'clock this afternoon. John Dickinson at 4:35. So we're going to have a lot on that Clipper game as we get into the 4 o'clock hour. 5 before 5 is happening tonight. Warriors Live will be on the air at 6 o'clock. And Warriors playoff coverage here on 95.7 The Game is presented by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. As we were saying, Draymond Green was talking a little bit with the media today. And look, he says it's not his job to tell Kevin Durant to shoot more. And if you wanted to read in between the lines here, you could. I won't. I'm not going to read in between the lines here. I don't think that Draymond is going out of his way to insert any more static into this season than necessary. Here is the soundbite.
I just encourage him to play basketball. I really feel he should play it. It's not really my job to decide what somebody else should do, how they feel they should play the game of basketball. That's on them.
That's on them is what I think a lot of people are focusing on here. And people are saying, well, you know, that's Draymond saying that, well, that's on Kevin for playing so passive, even though he's got this grandiose skill set. If he's going to get all passive when he's faced against a bulldog like Beverly, then so be it. So be it. I mean, I just think that's not this time of year. Like, Draymond can be self-destructive. He can even be postseason self-destructive. But he's a lot smarter than that. He wasn't trying to give you a nuanced shot at Kevin Durant in that answer.
No, he wasn't. I think people forget that players don't deliver messages to other players through the instrument of press conferences. If they want to say something, they have plenty of opportunities, and they usually do. They choose, for the most part, the locker room, sometimes the bus. Even on rare occasions, the huddle during a timeout. But they don't do it through us. They might troll the other team through us because it's the easiest way to disseminate it. But Draymond Green is not sending a message to Kevin Durant. First of all, Durant doesn't do messages. Second of all, Green knows, and they all know, this is the time where you basically don't point fingers. It's genuinely destructive. And it's not only genuinely destructive, it's almost always destructive. So no, all he was saying was, I'm not going to get into that with you guys. I'm not going to play that game. It's not my place to tell a player like Kevin Durant how many times to shoot. In fact, it's nobody's place, including Kevin Durant's. Let the offense come. If he only gets 8 shots tonight and they win by 15, who's going to complain? Because this is not about Kevin Durant getting justice for the outrage of Patrick Beverley 3 nights ago. It's not. It's about win the game, go to the next game. It can't be more linear than that. And as much as we need to fill airtime with nonsense, and I'm not saying we, I mean, I'm saying, well, you. But no, we don't need to. I mean, you can play the game if you want because you have hours to fill, but it's irrelevant. The whole point is you win the game and then let everybody argue about the box score for 2 days. That's why they put the box score out.
If the Warriors win tonight, it's not going to matter how it happens. But for Kevin Durant, I think I would like to see him come out in uber aggressive mode. I don't want to see silent assassin. I want to see bold faced, I'm going to walk right up to Archduke Ferdinand level assassin. Like, I want John Wilkes Booth hopping onto the stage after the actual, like, I want some serious presence from Kevin Durant, and I want it early. I'm going to say that without apology. I have a level of expectation that I apply to him that I do not apply to other players, but that is when I say heavy is the head that wears the crown. I think Steph is going to be very aggressive tonight getting off. I think we're going to see a always ready to shoot my shot, Klay Thompson. Kevin Durant, tonight's the night to shoot your shot. And you say, you know, if I could only shoot my shot at 43% over Patrick Beverley, that's really not getting us anywhere. Well, it is if everyone else is having a really bad quarter. You shooting 43% while the rest of the team isn't shooting well sounds pretty good to me. So go out there and do it tonight. Be a little more urgent. Steve Kerr talked about urgency with us the other day, and I have a little solution that could maybe be implemented at Game 5 when this series gets back to Oakland, and we will introduce you to the Kazoo of Focus in just a little bit. I don't know how much you can learn from an NFL hype video release, but there's a lot of people trying to tell you they've learned a lot about the number one pick in the draft thanks to Arizona's release. We'll have to talk about a few of those. The Sharks are skating for their playoff lives in San Jose tonight. And the question for everyone in that Sharks dressing room is simple. You guys want game six or a tee time to be your next sporting event? What do you really want that to be? If this team is bounced tonight, what is the ripple effect of that for this team? If they win and go forward, do they have a shot in game six, or are they only postponing the inevitable? We've got all that for you. We talked about the most influential people on the time list, about all the influential people in sports. We came up with our own little lists. I got one just directed directly at the Bay Area. We've got that. And if you're Chris Davis, you're definitely the one KD who's staying, and I'm sure Elena will tell you all about that in our update here on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
It's a pleasure to have you here today. A little bit later on today, Jim Barnett, in about 40 minutes from right now. He is down in L.A. We're going to get you down to L.A. Warrior playoff coverage on 95.7 The Game, presented by Great Clips, proud partner of the Golden State Warriors. And our coverage of Warriors Live begins at 6 o'clock tonight. It is Game 3, and it's bigger than it should be. It's bigger than anyone expected it to be. And obviously, it's the fork in the road of this series. Or maybe that's game four. I know we were talking about it an awful lot. And when the deal is, when the question is focus, I think that putting game four back into play as the pivot point of the series is absolutely on the table. Because if the Warriors come out and win enthusiastically tonight, they just might put themselves in the mindset to not take the next game as seriously. That the next two games are obviously on the road, and we can't really deal or ask the crowd to be pro-Warrior in any way down in Staples Center. It's never going to happen. So, Ray, I've come up with a little plan, and I know a lot of people are going to think this is a bad plan, but it could help the Warriors win an NBA championship, so I'm going to go with it. Last night, when we were talking to Steve Kerr, an interview that will be replayed at 4:20 this afternoon, I asked him if there was anything he could do to kind of get the players' attention when they started losing focus. Is there anything you and your staff can do to inject moments of urgency, like just have a whistle, and if you sense them losing focus, you start blowing the whistle like it's a shark warning at a beach or something?
Well, that's what timeouts are for.
So he's like, look, I actually do have a little bit of a whistle in a timeout, but guess what? None of those timeouts worked. It still wasn't enough to get the Golden State Warriors' attention, so Ray, I've come up with a little idea. It's impossible to ignore 19,000 kazoos. I would like everyone to bring a kazoo to Game 5 back at Oracle. And if you feel the Warriors at any point slipping, losing focus, and look, this has happened 10, 12, 15 times this year. It could happen at any point in time in the postseason. That now has been proven. I say everybody in the crowd gets on their kazoo of focus and sends the Warriors a little message. Do you think it'll work?
I don't know if it'll work, but I think the Warriors should re-sign David West to come up into the stands and lay out the first one who does it. Because 19,000 people doing that is reminiscent of the Vuvuzela and the in the World Cup in South Africa, and that was greeted with universal revulsion to the point where it's now a violation of the Geneva Convention to have one.
Well, if one's annoying, 19,000 have to be very annoying. Let me just show you how annoying three of them are, because I gave both Elena and Albie a kazoo of focus before today's show. Are you guys ready?
Think so.
Ray, I got you one too. Would you like to be the fourth kazoo?
I didn't bring it with me.
Oh, so he already lost his kazoo.
If one is supposed to do it, three should be sufficient.
All right, so let's just give you a scenario. Warriors are up 31. Everything's fine. 10-point run in the other direction. Now they're up 21. You turn to the person you're sitting next to, and you just be like, you got your kazoo? You might not need it now, but you just want to make sure everyone has it. Now the lead is down to 15. and you're rummaging in your pocket. Now the lead is 8. And this is what it sounds. The kazoo of focus could be the difference between a title and another trip around Lake Merritt or not. I mean, come on.
It could be the difference between an enjoyable night at the arena and getting your face punched in.
Maybe.
No, I think there's an excellent chance of that.
I'm willing to take a punch for another title, Ray.
I'm not.
Well, you've already forgotten your kazoo, so
well,
that's obvious.
Yeah, but it's resting comfortably in the break room or wherever, whatever we call that room next to us.
That
chamber of horrors. I'm relying on the fact that 30-year-old men can learn a lesson and maintain it. And now that it's the playoffs and now that they've been slapped in the face, I think they can absorb the lessons that were involved in that and make the appropriate adjustments to their attitude in case they get up by 31 again. In fact, I would wager that it's less likely that they'll be up by 31 again in these playoffs than it is that you'll have to worry about a big lead and it shrinking, because it will shrink, because that's how leads work. I don't know if you saw the Denver game the other night, but it happened there too. Leads of 20 points are easily reachable.
Yeah, 15-point runs are available for everyone except the Utah Jazz, apparently.
Well, because they're not designed to, A, fall behind that far, or, B, do anything about it once they do. They're just a funky team that way. But really, I mean, the Warriors are special because, A, they basically act invulnerable. They think like they're invulnerable. And when they're the one and somebody else is the 8, that just makes it all the louder, because those are circumstances that are involved here too. It's part of it. I mean, the Warriors walk like everyone is still afraid of them. And I think the lessons of the regular season should have been sufficient, but they needed a reminder the other night. So we see what happens tonight. I'm guessing they will cover the 8.5 comfortably. They won't even need to hit the total of 234. By the way, I'm Joe Fortenbaugh, and I'm here to
put money in your pocket.
Yeah. No, I think this should be a relatively routine / uneventful game. And I think the Durant-Beverly sidebar will probably be put to rest, probably by a really hard pick early in the game as soon as Beverly's in.
And I wonder if that comes from Andrew Bogut. And what his role in tonight's game will be kind of interesting, if he'll be back setting a defensive tone, maintaining a defensive tone that got set early and then went away. If he got subbed out, comes back in. We'll see what Bogut really does to change the makeup of tonight's game when he gets out there as tonight's starter at center. You've heard this an awful lot from Greg Papa this week.
Butt front.
Or just the concept of.
The concept of a butt front, butt front. The concept of a butt front, butt front.
So, you've heard so much about that. There's got to be something to it. Well, the Warriors' phrase that pays all week long at practice apparently has not been
butt front.
It's been top locking. Read about this today, Tim Kawakami's article in The Athletic. It's how the Clippers are really mucking up the Warriors' offensive concepts. And they're doing it at the top of the key, they're doing it on the perimeter, and they're doing it with their backs to half court, not to the basket. Basically, if you think about top locking, or as Greg has so illustrated,
butt front.
If you think about what that is, you basically have guys...
The concept of a butt front.
You basically have guys boxing guys off the three-point line. And they're playing defense, again, somewhere behind the shooter at times. And they're not... They are running the Warriors off the line, and they're keeping them off the line, and they're keeping their action off the line. And it's what they've determined. I mean, every single Warrior's talking about this today. They're calling it top locking, not
butt front.
Top locking is where they're going. Kevin Durant, writes Tim Kawakami, is the league's most talented player, and if he's engaged, the Warriors are unbeatable. An opponent might deploy the Kevin rules, which he was talking about, the Jordan rules earlier, and the Kevin rules have an awful lot to do with
butt front.
But they've... they've got little chance against a locked-in Kevin Durant. He's too big, he's too skilled, he's too smart, and he's flanked by way too much talent. So what you do to unlock the top locking, this is where I think DeMarcus Cousins could have come in a little handy tonight. You get low block action, and you work it down there. You work some low block action. You take the paint, take it back, and see what you can do there. If they're playing you off the line, and oh, by the way, Kevin Durant is like the most efficient mid-range shooter in the NBA. Klay Thompson, not too far behind him. You know, the old saying, Ray, it's you know, if you think about it, like if the lane is the front porch and the perimeter is the fence, you've got the inside of the perimeter, the rest of the key is the yard. And the old saying is, let the kids, keep them off the patio, keep them off the porch, keep them off the fence, let them play in the yard. The Warriors got to play in the yard tonight. They're the best mid-range team, and if the Clippers are running them off the three-point line, let them. Go beat them in the mid-range game, and Kevin, that's you. And you don't need a whole bunch of dribbles to find your mid-range shot. That's a turnaround pivot on 1 foot shot over anybody in the NBA. So I think that's where the Warriors get an awful lot of their offense from tonight, by going away from the defense that is locking everything up at the top of the perimeter.
No, but neither offense nor defense is static. And it's not where the final shot is taken. It's how you get to it. Because if the Warriors are active on that side of the floor, as they were, again, for much of game one, and the first 29 minutes of game two, their motion will get that fixed. You know, basically, if they get tied up, you know, if they get quote top locked, do that by moving.
Well, and I think the part of the top lock is we are going to restrict your movement, and that's why they're playing
okay,
with their backs.
But that doesn't prevent them from moving anyway. I mean, it's they can't. I mean, one of the things that the Clippers like to do is when they're going to do what they do or what they've been doing to the Warriors is they're assuming that you're just going to stop. And I think the Warriors after a while just sort of stopped. But I think the way to deal with the Clippers is to do what they did for literally 29 minutes, where the Clippers coming out and guarding Curry at the half court line and coming out and guarding beyond the arc wasn't working. I mean, there's a lesson not only in the 31 points they blew, but in the 31 points that they led by up to that point. So it's not like they don't know how to break this. It's that, and I'm going to say this again to the extent of being, to the point of being tedious, this wasn't a tactical failure. This was a belief that the Clippers would quit. Now that they know the Clippers won't quit, they simply apply the lessons of the first game and a half and do what they did. And it doesn't matter how many shots Kevin Durant gets or doesn't get. It's about the efficiency of the offense as a whole.
Well, if the Warriors want a top lock or
butt front
against Lou Williams tonight, I would suggest they do that because they just got to slow him down. That goes a long way to finding you a win in game three tonight. Okay, it's official. The text of the day on the Chilton Auto Body text line, Damon and Ray, I like big butt fronts, and I cannot lie.
Butt front.
Oh, boy.
The concept of a butt front.
Let's go to Larry in San Jose. Larry, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Hello?
What's up, Larry?
Oh, it's all about this game. It's all about the Warriors. And I just have my own little personal theory. I just want to share for a good feel for the Bay Area fans that the Warriors could have won that game. They proved that being up 31 points. But my theory is this. The Warriors want to give the Oracle and Bay Area fans a gift, a closeout gift. And if they had won this game, going
to... No. Larry, I'm going to stop you right there. They did not intentionally lose a game so they can close a series out at home. we're better than that. You'd be better than
They've closed out series at home before.
Right, yeah.
The advantages to getting rid of a team in four games instead of five are pretty evident. They believed that they already won the game. It wasn't that they were trying to. Why would you build a 31-point lead if you wanted to lose the game?
Yeah, it just makes no.
No, it just, this is, I mean, the fact that there have been basically these three days since the end of that game basically has allowed us to overthink this.
Butt front.
Yeah. That said.
Butt front.
Right. And one more time, because it's magic.
The concept of a butt front.
There you go. No, this is basically them believing game two was over before it was over against a team that was either too stupid to know that it was over or too ornery to believe that it was over. That's all that happened here.
I respect that. I really do. I respect what the Clippers did. That's why I'm not mad at them at all for their t-shirt
tonight. No, there's absolutely no reason to be, you know. The Clippers did a very admirable thing, and because we are in the Bay Area, we're not giving them credit for that. The fact is, they said, you know what, we're down 31, but there's still a job to be done, and even if it's just for our own dignity, we're going to do it anyway. And the fact that it works once every 115 times doesn't change the fact that they said, we're not going to lay down and take this. I mean, there's nothing about that that isn't admirable.
888-957-9570 as your calls come in. Let me just bring up one more thing. Is it weird in a good way that this – or not is it good that this is a road game in a way? Because I feel the Warriors have a better job of locking in against the top lock, against the butt front, against whatever, when they're on the road. There is something about the road trip, the camaraderie. Steve Kerr says he likes to bring the guys out to where a lot of the team-building exercises – take place. I also think I don't know if they played with Oracle Arena final season pressure on their shoulders at times this year, if that did get to them, if just the comfort of home let them let off the pedal as much as anything else, and they thought Oracle Arena was going to bring them home in that game. I don't know, but being on the road tonight actually is probably a good thing for the Warriors. I kind of like it.
I honestly don't think it makes a difference at all. Because one of the things that I've always believed, as much as fans want to say that they are the wind beneath the team's sails, is that when you reach a certain age as a player, that's all noise. It doesn't reflect where their heads are at. If you're this good for this long, everything outside you is basically, it's outside the house. Winning teams are able to compartmentalize their tasks. And one of the things that the Warriors have proven that they're able to do is they don't let the road beat them, and they don't let the home floor bother them. It can bother other teams, but once you've won as much as they have, and you're at the age that they are, it doesn't matter whether it's home or away, because all they need to do to win over a home crowd or depress a road crowd is to have a 12-0 run.
All right, with Curry involved somehow. Hits one, two, threes in a row, the place gets nuts.
Crowds are easy to break. It's one of the great myths about we have the best crowds in all of sports, or we have the best crowds in the NHL. Whatever it is, you can break a crowd in about 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. No doubt. No, it doesn't take long to pull a building into a game or take them right out of a game. And tonight, on the road, the one thing we talked about a little bit yesterday was if Patrick Beverley was allowed to be so physical with Kevin Durant in Game 2, what will he be allowed to do against Kevin Durant in Game 3? Tonight's head official is Scott Foster. Now, on the surface, Scott Foster is a name that trends, but it's not the worst draw in terms of officiating matchup tonight. Ray, you are the grand poobah of NBA official evaluation. What do you think of Scott Foster drawing this assignment tonight?
It's not just Scott Foster. It's the crew, because Jason Phillips has been around a while. He's worked finals too. This is almost a top-heavy crew for a game three in round one. Scott Twardowski's the third guy, but he's sort of a face. But Foster is a good road official. Jason Phillips has been around the block for forever. And you may get a lot of fouls called again, but I think that works to the Warriors' benefit, not to their detriment. The only thing, again, that's going to bother the Warriors is if they stop doing what they do. Because when they're moving and Patrick Beverley tries to lock up Durant or...
Butt front.
You're going to kill me with that. Or there's contact, it's much easier to sell that as a foul when you're moving. When you're standing, I mean, because that's when Patrick Beverley wraps his arms around Durant.
The
when
concept Durant is stationary, of a butt front.
If you move around and you keep moving, one, the offense works better. Two, it's easier to catch the defensive team fouling. I mean, there's nothing better for a defender than a stationary guy with a ball. Nothing better. So the Warriors simply have to move in rhythm with the offense as designed. And that's why I don't think that, A, being on the road matters much. The officials will matter some because this is not a crew that sits back. I mean, Scott Foster has a history of blowing the whistle. Jason Phillips has a history of blowing the whistle. And Twardowski will go which way they go. So I don't think that's a bad crew for them at all. Plus, Foster's 27 and the Warriors are 27-4 in the last 31 games that Foster's worked.
You got to like that number. It's funny. Scott Foster, I got him filed under red alert. Like if Scott Foster's on the court, red alert, red alert, red alert.
But you know what? Joey Crawford was that guy too, and every team in the league loved to see him when they were on the road because he wouldn't be intimidated. I mean, Foster's the issue that teams have with Scott Foster is he's kind of an imperious pain in the ass. Like he turned himself into this caricatured, I'm not talking to you because I'm me. And in the last couple of years since Monty McCutcheon became the head of officials, he's lightened up a lot. I mean, I remember games distinctly where he kept Draymond Green in games basically by calming him down without making a big deal out of it, and you really had to look to see what he was doing to get Draymond out of DEFCON 1. And all you have to do is not come at him and scream. It's all you have to do. I mean, he'll talk as much as he needs to, but that's it. That was his reputation when he became that red flag for you. He's not that guy anymore, or at least he's less of that guy than he used to be. This is a good crew for Golden State.
Jim Barnett joins us at 4 o'clock to talk about it. He's already down in L.A., and he's joining us at 4, again, to get you ready for tonight's game. We've got Warriors Live starting at 6 o'clock and tip-off 7:30 tonight here on 95.7 The Game. Jim Barnett coming up courtesy of Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. When we come on back, your phone calls are up. 888-957-9570. What needs to happen for the Warriors to walk away with a win tonight, in front of them or behind them?
Butt front.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
It's a great night of sports on the tube, on the radio. We've got Warriors coming up later tonight on 95.7 The Game. In the NHL tonight, 3 Stanley Cup playoff games will be underway as we get into the 4 o'clock hour. Capitals, Hurricanes, Blues, Jets, and of course tonight we've got Sharks hosting the Golden Knights, skating for their playoff lives. They're facing elimination. We'll see if they can hold it off, force a game 6, or if they're just going to go ahead and give it on up. They lost 5-0 in the last game. We'll keep an eye on that tonight. Obviously, in the NBA, we got the Warriors and Clippers. Nuggets, Spurs tonight. That series is tied at 1. We got 76ers and Nets. That series is tied at 1. There's a lot of series that have been tied at 1, except for one, which has been very lopsided, and that's the Houston Rockets, who have just been destroying the Utah Jazz. I would like to retract any and all positive Utah Jazz vibes that I was putting out on the air last week. Maybe I was trying to reverse jinx the whole thing or something. I don't know. I really thought that Utah was going to be able to gum up Houston enough to score enough themselves to maybe take a game or two and make that series difficult. Right now, it's just all Rockets, and the Utah Jazz are so radically outgunned in this series, I don't know if they're going to take a game. And let me just tell you, if the Rockets got this for the Jazz, what have they got waiting for the Golden State Warriors, the only basketball team that they've been thinking about for the last calendar year?
Well, all series are matchups. Utah is far better at home than they are on the road. So we'll see what happens in games 3 and 4. I don't think it'll be nearly as easy for Houston, because when you change just the venue that radically, you will see differences. I mean, if Utah gets beat by 20 at home, then your point is well taken. Otherwise, I wouldn't be surprised if Utah won twice. Just because recency bias, when you go from basically sea level to whatever they are, like 4,000 feet, that makes a difference. It makes a big difference. So I'm not as stunned by that as maybe you are, only because Utah at Utah is different.
I just didn't think that they were going to get clocked quite the way that they have in two games. And really just, I mean, they've proven over the course of two games, too, that they're incapable of hanging with this team offensively.
Oh, they're not nearly as good. Don't get me wrong. You're right there. But what they do well, they do exceedingly well in Salt Lake City.
They do, and that is a tough gym to play in. It really is, for all the right reasons and some of the wrong reasons, as was demonstrated earlier this season by those fans in Utah. Let's get out to the phones, 888-957-9570. This is Paul in Oakland. Paul, what do you got?
Hey, guys, good show. Really enjoy Ray paired up with you, Damon. It's a good mix.
Thank you.
Boy, you're going to change.
Watching the game the other night and watching that thing ravel down and unfold, I had a very, very eerie feeling, one that I had about 43 years ago, and Ray might remember this since he's been around here since, maybe the last dinosaur was walking around.
Good. You're really making points here.
There we go. And by the way, Ray, I used to watch you referee high school basketball games back in the day, and I'm glad you never quit your day job. So my point, the 43-year-ago deal was watching the Warriors lose Game 7 of the Western Conference Championship the year following the NBA title, and the game just had so many similarities to it, with obviously a large lead the other night, and then a double-digit lead against the Phoenix Suns in 76. Second half, Rick Barry kind of went into a funk. Wilkes' shots stopped falling. Alvin Adams and Dan Morley, I believe, were the cogs for the Suns. They caught fire. And the Warriors just kind of stopped playing in a manner in which was reminiscent to what we saw on the other night. I think another piece of similarity to that thing was the Warriors the year before, when they won the NBA championship, had brought in a veteran guy by the name of Bill Bridges. Spent a lot of years playing for the St. Louis and Atlanta Hawks. And he was a real veteran, calming presence in the locker room, and he was an enforcer on the court. David West, a name that you guys mentioned earlier on the show today, I think that presence that David West brought to the team the last couple of years was definitely in absentia the other night.
Yeah, that's a very fair thing to say. And David West is the guy who commanded the respect enough to talk to the team as honestly as anyone who's ever been allowed to talk to the Golden State Warriors. And they respected him. He was really good in the years that he was here. You want to talk about filling the role that you were brought in to play? He was phenomenal at it. And I'm not surprised that the Warriors' toughness gets harder and harder to find at times in the versions of the Warriors that come without David West. David West is at least, three or four vertebrae in the backbone of this franchise. And when he's gone, he's been missed a little bit. I think
he's been missed a lot.
Yeah.
And it's not his toughness that they miss. It's his wisdom. Because he would have understood, and maybe I'm giving him more credit than I should, but the essence of David West is, this was 31, now it's 20, snap out of it. Because when a player says it, it can be different. And when David West said it, and he basically had a passport to go anywhere in that room at any time, that might have snapped them out of it in a way that Steve Kerr simply can't. Not because he's incapable of it, but because when you've listened to a coach for 5 years straight, no matter how much you love that coach, at some point it becomes autopilot. And that's when you were going, Steve Kerr should, you know, get in their faces. It's not who he is. And if he acts differently, if he does that, then he should be beaten. I don't think there's any question. No, but David West has a cachet that, I mean, I'm surprised that they didn't throw so much money at him. You say, well, literally, what do you want to come back?
Right. We'll buy your retirement out.
Yeah. But true to his nature, he would have said, you don't have enough money to buy me out.
Right.
I want to do this.
Man of principle.
But no, and that's part of it. I mean, he literally had the kind of cachet that would have allowed him to walk into a huddle, even if he was in civilian clothes. He'd just go, that's not how this is done. I won't permit it.
Right.
And they would said, you're right.
I'm here representing the basketball gods.
No, I'm here representing me.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to reference anybody else. He walks in and, I mean, he's a nation of one.
JJ in San Jose, you're on 95.7 The Game. JJ, what do you got?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
Real quick, shout out to Ray Arata. I read your piece on Deadspin. It was great. It was like reading a movie review on one of the greatest one-hit wonders of all time or whatever. But I will say this, though. Ray hit it on the spot. I think people are giving you got to give the Clippers credit for what they did, because there was a very resilient, you know, way to finish the game. And they took the game from the Warriors. But at the end of the day, the Warriors, what happened was they got up 31, Steph fouled out, and they were staring at the clock, wishing that clock was running down, because they didn't even want – it looked like they didn't even want to be there. All right, we're up 31. Boom, let's go. Let's roll it in. Let's leave. And that came to bite them in the butt because, like we realized, that wasn't going to happen with the Clippers. This is all on the Warriors. Everybody knows if they're focused, they're going to win. The Clippers are an eighth seed. I think we're giving the Clippers a little too much credit, because this is more of the disappointing effort and the disappointing focus and all this other stuff that the Warriors. Right.
Look, when it's like this, JJ. When everything in Game 2 was normal, the Warriors were up by 31. When it became abnormal, well, we all know what happened. But normal means Warriors should roll, and hopefully they get back to normal tonight. Before we continue talking Warriors, when Jim Barnett gets here in about 4 or 5 minutes from right now, Ray, there was one other thing that happened today here in the Bay Area that sounds like Warrior news, but it's not. KD is staying. The other KD, Chris Davis, signs a 2-year extension to stay with the A's. The A's have the best power hitter on the West Coast, if not in the American League, in all of baseball. And they sign him to a 2-year extension for the song of 16.75 over the course of 2 years. Grand total of $33 million. And it's a lot of money. It's more money than I'm ever going to see, you're ever going to see. That's good money if you can make it. But he is underpaid for a power hitter, and the A's have to be thrilled that they were able to lock up Chris Davis through 2021 at an incredibly team-friendly number.
I don't know how incredibly team-friendly it was, only because he's a guy without a position. And the guys with positions who can hit like that, they're the ones who get the $300 million deals. The fact that he's a designated hitter, I think, probably limits his marketability like it would limit anybody's. But what he got to do was get through the arbitration years. And then, when it's time to be a free agent, if he has two more 247 years like he's put together, then he can go on the open market and then see what the true ceiling is. The ceiling for now is probably this, and it was set by the Ozzie Albies deal, which was very team-friendly. I mean, I think players are in a mood to get what we can now and then position ourselves at a time when we can basically go wherever we want.
But Ozzie Albies hasn't proven anything. Chris Davis, since joining the Oakland A's in 2016, leads Major League Baseball in home runs with 143. He's tied for second with 355 runs driven in, and he's fourth in extra base hits. I mean, he is bona fide.
None of that is disputed, except that he's older than Albies, and Albies has a position. Plus, the Braves are gambling that the Albies they saw is a sustainable Albies. It's a bit of a roll of the dice, but they're in different situations, so they're not entirely analogous. The one thing that makes them analogous is they took what was available at the time, figuring that down the road there will be big money if they can back what they've done.
The only good deal you ever get is if both parties walk away upset with the deal or very happy with the deal. If one person feels like they got screwed and the other person feels like they got over on the other, like, that's when bad blood starts to percolate. Chris Davis has never been anything other than pro staying with the Oakland A's. He just put pen to paper that is going to make him a richer man than he's ever been. And the A's front office have to be celebrating this dollar amount to lock him up. They do.
I don't know that it could have been worse for them, though, because I think, based on other comparable contracts, this is not out of line with those. And again, I think it's got a lot to do with the fact that you can't put him in the outfield.
Well,
you can't put him at first base. He is a four-at-bat-a-game guy.
When it comes to comparable baseball contracts, the A's aren't exactly dripping with those. So it's good to see them ponying up for a guy who is the heartbeat of their franchise right now.
Well, You can make a case for Matt Chapman, too. And frankly, the great unseen, untold tale of this team is, in fact, Lou Trevino may be the next great reliever because his stuff is quintuply nasty.
There you go. We'll get back to his quintuple nastiness. But right now it's time for our 4 o'clock hour.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.